Good afternoon. My name is Janetta, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the EPA Disparate Testing Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Gilfilling, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on today's call. This is EPA Deputy Press Secretary Brendan Gilfilling. In just a second, Dr. Paul Anastas, who is the head of EPA's Office of Research and Development, is going to speak. He'll make brief remarks, and then we'll open up to questions. We will take as many questions as time allows. So with that said, I will introduce Dr. Anastas, as I said, the Assistant Administrator for the Office of Research and Development here at EPA. Thanks.
Good afternoon. We've now passed the 100th day of the BP oil spill tragedy. We are relieved that the well is currently sealed and that dispersant application has been reduced to zero. Let me be clear that as of July 19th, no new dispersant has been released into the Gulf of Mexico. We hope and expect that this will continue to be the case. However, this tragedy does not end with the sealing of the well. The President and the EPA have committed to the long-term recovery and restoration of the Gulf Coast, one of our most precious ecosystems. The use and application of dispersants is just one part of a much larger response strategy to the BP spill. The strategy also includes direct recovery, containment, burning, and skimming as important measures to keep oil off our shorelines. In this overall response plan, dispersant use was an effort of last resort. EPA recognizes that dispersant usage is an environmental trade-off not to be taken lightly. Rigorous daily monitoring of the environment for effects and effectiveness of dispersants is absolutely critical. EPA has continued constant monitoring of the air, water, and sediments near and on the shore from the earliest days of this disaster. Jointly with the Coast Guard, we have also directed BP to monitor for dispersants in the deep sea. We have also conducted independent toxicity tests on 8 available dispersants, including Corexit, the dispersant applied in the Gulf of Mexico. At the end of last month, we released preliminary results on the toxicity of dispersants alone. Recall that these tests were a comparative analysis of the 8 dispersants. That report can be found on EPA's website. Today, I'm reporting on phase 2 of our testing. This phase includes tests on both Louisiana sweet crude oil alone and on mixtures of each of the 8 dispersants combined with Louisiana sweet crude oil. Results indicate that the 8 dispersants tested have similar toxicity to one another when mixed with Louisiana sweet crude oil. Results also indicate that the dispersant oil mixtures are generally no more toxic to the test species than oil alone. They would generally be categorized in the moderate range. Let me emphasize that the toxicity tests discussed today have been conducted on sensitive aquatic species using standard laboratory methods that are consistent with the National Contingency Plan Subpart J. These standard methods are designed to test sensitive species to ensure that we are most cautious and maximally protective in determining the relative toxicity of pollutants. The species used are widely considered to be representative of species found in the Gulf and are tested during a juvenile life stage when organisms are even more sensitive to pollutant stress. Let me also be clear in explaining that during these tests, we continue to increase concentrations of oil and dispersant mixtures until we find toxicity effects that allow for a relative comparison of dispersants to be made to one another. These tests were conducted over a range of concentrations, including those much greater than what aquatic life is expected to encounter in the Gulf. We also have fluorescence data that indicate the dispersants are working to keep oil away from the shore. These data are important, but continued monitoring is necessary. We will continue monitoring efforts to ensure that dissolved oxygen levels do not decrease below levels of concern. To date, we have not seen dissolved oxygen levels fall below those levels of concern to aquatic life. So while more needs to be done, the picture is becoming clearer. We see that dispersants are working to keep oil off our precious shorelines and away from sensitive coastal ecosystems. We also see that dispersants are less toxic than the oil being released into the Gulf. We see further that that the dispersant plus oil mixtures have roughly the same toxicity as the oil itself. To date, monitoring data have indicated no dispersant constituents away from the wellhead. EPA monitoring has not found dispersant chemicals in water or sediment near coasts or wetlands. And to ensure that there is no confusion, I remind you that no dispersant application near wetlands or any other shoreline is permitted. By law, dispersants are not to be used within 3 miles of the coast. BP's application, both on surface and undersea, was primarily concentrated around the source of the leak, some 50 miles offshore. I will close by emphasizing that we will continue to monitor and ask the hard questions until we more fully understand the long-term effects of the BP oil spill. Additional investigations are required to ensure the long-term recovery and restoration of the Gulf. At every step of the way, we are going to continue to follow the science. We have taken nothing for granted, as seen by the fact that we are here today discussing testing that Administrator Jackson ordered to confirm what BPA was telling us. We have consistently questioned, verified, and validated decisions with monitoring, analysis, and use of the best available science and data. EPA is fully committed to working with the people of the Gulf, our federal partners, the scientific community, and NGOs toward the recovery of the Gulf of Mexico and the restoration of its precious ecosystem. I'll now be happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Dr. Anastas. Operator, can we open it up to questions?
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask an audio question, simply press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first audio question comes from the line of Matt Wald.
Dr. Anastas, thank you for taking time for us today. Is it the dispersants are generally regarded as toxic? You're saying when mixed with oil, they're not more toxic than the oil alone. What's the approximate ratio if you're throwing more toxic material into the Gulf on top of material that's already toxic? What's the approximate ratio of dispersant to oil?
So we have in volume, we have about 100 times more oil that has been released to the Gulf by comparison to dispersant. Since we know that the oil is more toxic to the more toxic than the dispersant, this is yet another multiplier effect. Add on top of that, then we recognize that the type of acute toxicity that we're discussing today is only one part of the hazards that the oil poses. The oil also poses hazards of a physical form that we see so tragically with the coating of the brown pelicans, other sea life. So the impacts of the oil in terms of volume, in terms of toxicity, and in terms of hazard certainly far outweigh what we've seen so far from the data about the dispersants.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Sweetie White.
Hi, thank you for speaking with us today. The oil is sinking to the seafloor because of dispersant. How is this better than it washing up on the shore when it's easier to clean? And how will that be dealt with, all this oil mixed with dispersant on the seafloor?
So the good thing about the current scenario is that we are seeing the oil in a place where it can be biodegraded via the natural biodegradation process that takes place. So the purpose of the dispersant is to put the oil in a form that can be broken down by the natural microbes. Once that oil makes it to shore, it's causing an impact on our most sensitive ecosystems that is extremely difficult to clean up and has an extreme negative impact on the precious ecosystem of the Gulf.
Roberta, this is Brendan again. When you ask your question, if you can just identify what outlet you're with, we'd appreciate that. Thanks. Operator, we'll take the next question.
Your next audio question comes from the line of John Pope with the Times Buchanan.
Take it in, please. Hi, Dr. Anastas. I have a double-barreled question here. Following up on the previous question about biodegradation, is there any estimate of how long that will take? And two, Did these results surprise you?
Well, thank you for those questions. The exact rate of biodegradation is something that we are looking at very seriously. We can see that we know that depending on conditions that biodegradation can take place in an enhanced way, and one of the purposes of the dispersants is to increase the degradation efficiency that would otherwise take place naturally. The what we've been seeing is the degradation rates are 50% faster when the dispersants are used. We're looking to get even more precise data on that on those degradation rates. And I'm sorry, the second part of your question?
Did anything surprise you in these results?
Well, I think that it was interesting to see that the dispersant oil mixture was about the same toxicity as the oil alone. I think that that's probably shows us that the effect of the oil plus dispersant is based on this data seems to be a wise decision, and that the oil itself is the hazard that we're concerned about, is the, as we've said before, is enemy number one. And so that was something that that this data did show us.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Ethan Harp with CNN.
Good afternoon. Two questions. First, Doctor, I just want to clear up any confusion, because it sounds like at times you said that the dispersant has been shown to be less toxic, and then I hear you say the same toxicity as the oil in the water. Could you clear that up for us?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, because it is a fine point that is very important. Our initial phase one toxicity tests were on the dispersant alone. This phase two was on the oil alone, as well as the oil dispersant mixture. The oil dispersant mixture is of approximately the same toxicity as the oil alone. The dispersants are less toxic than either the oil or the oil and dispersant mixtures.
All right, and my second question, have you received any evidence or any reports of any wildlife that have been sickened or killed as a direct result of the dispersants?
I have not seen any evidence, any data that has shown wildlife sickened or killed because of dispersants.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Kate Bradshaw with WMNS 88.5 Tampa.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I actually am just wondering about the funding source of the study. I mean, I assume that's the federal government, but I just wanted to get clarification on that.
Yes, this is a study that was funded by the U.S. EPA.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Curtis Morgan with the Miami Herald.
Herald. I've got a number of questions. Is this data posted anywhere where people can look at in terms of, you know, what the levels of toxicity are and things like that?
Absolutely. The entirety of the report will be posted on the EPA website today. Now.
Just to refresh everyone, that website is epa.gov/BP spill.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Dan Vergano with USA Today.
Hi, thanks very much. It's USA Today. I was wondering, can you say about biodegradation, anything? I mean, once the oil is consumed by these microbes, it goes into the food chain, doesn't it? I mean, what is the eventual going to happen to the toxins in the oil and the dispersants once, you know, the microbes die and are eaten by little fish and so on up the chain?
Well, that's a very important point. Thank you for your question. No, the biodegradation process is where the microbes are degrading, consuming, metabolizing, breaking down the constituents of the oil, ultimately until it is degraded into carbon dioxide and water. That's the natural degradation process that takes place. So what we ultimately want is that this hazard, the oil the oil constituents to, of course, go away. The way that it goes away in nature is for those to be degraded, to be metabolized by these microbes.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Jeff Ball with Wall Street Journal.
Hi, good afternoon. Two questions, if I could. First is this precisely what BP said in its letter to the EPA a while back, or do your results differ in any way from what BP said that it had found? And then secondly, you had said that, if I understood correctly, that you didn't find traces of any dispersant away from the well. And I just want to make sure I'm understanding that, given the joint analysis group reports that you've issued, which, as I understand, have found plumes of dispersed oil in their characterization some number of kilometers from the well. So I just want to make sure I'm reconciling those two things.
Thanks for your question. I appreciate it. So the Environmental Protection Agency made a request to BP for its data supporting its choice of correction. When they were unable to provide that data, the administrator ordered independent testing. What we're reporting on today is that independent testing, that data to confirm not only on corrected but the ability to do a comparative analysis across all of the eight different dispersants. So now we have data in order to support decisions that were being considered in an ongoing way. The second part of your question is also an important one. What we're saying is that we have seen no data that is showing the presence of dispersant constituents away from the wellhead. What you're referring to is that there have been reports of dispersed oil, which is not the presence of dispersants, but dispersed oil away from the wellhead. What NOAA has reported is that they were seeing at various depths previously was oil at 1 to 2 parts per million, so very, very dilute oil, and sometimes referred to as clouds or plumes, away from the wellhead. That is different from seeing dispersants away from the wellhead. We are seeing no data that shows dispersants away from the wellhead.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Tom Lebicano with Platts Inside Energy.
Hi, Doctor. This is Tom Lobianco at Platts Inside Energy. Thanks for doing this. Much appreciated. Two questions here, both related. Ed Markey has been reporting that BP was using more Corexit than what was being reported to the U.S. Coast Guard and the EPA. Does that affect your ratio calculations in determining the toxicity if, in fact, as Ed Markey and his staff seem to be reporting, that it was 2 to 3 times more Corexit being used than what was reported? And then the follow-up on that related is the EPA and U.S. Coast Guard directive regarding the mitigation decrease in use of Corexit. Did that hold any sway? Because Ed Markey's staff seems to be saying that the BP was disregarding that.
So the EPA and the Coast Guard have worked extremely closely throughout this response. After putting out that the directive at the end of May, we have seen the decrease in dispersant use. We saw a decrease in dispersant use by 72% from its peak usage. While it may be true that that EPA may not have concurred on every decision for waiver of the amounts of dispersants being used, that is a decision of the federal on-scene coordinator. We do believe that overall the use of dispersants was one important tool in the overall response to this tragic oil spill. I'm sorry, the other part of your question?
Hi,
I think we lost my break. Can we move on to the next call?
Your next audio question comes from the line of Amina Khan with Los Angeles Times.
Hi, thank you again for having this press conference. I have a few questions. One of my questions is, this is one of the first times that this person has been used at such depths with oil that is at that temperature, that is like about 100 degrees centigrade. I mean, were the tests done on the oil or on the dispersant in these conditions, or were they done at the, you know, the standard conditions? I mean, because we don't know exactly how that may affect the chemical reactions. My other questions are, you mentioned that this the results here show that this was a wise approach for EPA in terms of dispersant usage. Does this affect EPA's approach moving forward? And also, given that you've now tested dispersant and dispersed oil, is there another round of tests you will be conducting?
Thank you for your questions. To answer your first question directly, the tests were done under standard methodologies in order to allow for comparison. So those are the methods that were are used at set temperatures, at set concentrations and set concentration ranges with species at particular ages, particular species. So if you're asking if they are the conditions at 5,000 feet and at those temperatures, the answer is no. They were done by the standard methodologies that have been applied. The second part of your question, does this show that that this was a wise decision by EPA? I'd say that the data tells us specifically what we were asking, and that is the dispersant and oil mixtures, the toxicity levels, and that confirms that under the specific scenario being an unprecedented release of quantity of oil to the Gulf at a particular depth in the ocean, proximity to particularly sensitive ecosystems, that this was an important tool in the response. I would not generalize moving beyond that in terms of going forward, because with the wide range of conditions that can change spill to spill, it's important to evaluate and make those decisions, and this this data will be one piece of information going forward if we have to make these decisions again in the future.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Eli Kinchy with Science Magazine.
Hi, it's Eli with Science. I just want to be clear, when the dispersant breaks up the oil into tiny droplets, you get what you're calling dispersed oil. Did any of your tests look at the toxicity of the dispersed oil versus the undispersed oil?
Yes. Let me make it clear, because the in the full protocols, I'm sure that the Science Magazine will want to be looking at the specific methodologies. The full protocol, the full report has all of the details, but let me just briefly explain that, yes, the protocol calls for taking the Louisiana sweet crude, putting it together with the dispersant, standardizing the energy input to create a high energy mixing in order to have the resultant dispersed oil, and that is what's being tested in order to simulate the conditions in the Gulf in order to get a reliable test. So the short answer to your question is yes.
And so you found that essentially those this is Eli from Science, by the way, not the Times. The dispersed oil are actually droplets of oil surrounded by these detergent particles from the dispersant, and what you found in your tests was that those were equally toxic to undispersed oil. That strikes me as surprising. You'd think that they would either be more or less toxic, since they present different chemicals to the cells of the organisms that you're using for testing.
And your question?
Am I right that these particles of oil are surrounded by dispersant particles, or is it that the dispersant is in such small quantities in the sample that essentially what you're testing is dispersed oil versus non-dispersed oil?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
My question is, I'll ask offline. It just strikes me as surprising that you would get the same level of toxicity for the oil, for the dispersant plus the dispersed oil droplets, as you would for the original dispersant, for the original oil, given that the oil particles are surrounded by dispersant detergent particles. So it looks very different to the cell when they encounter those particles.
Eli, I think that's a very reasonable analysis. I can understand the nature of the question. I do think it differs for each dispersant slightly, and you'll see when you look at the data that there might be slight increases for one versus another, but all of these are within the sensitivity of the test. So what we're seeing is across the test that we're not seeing that enhancement of toxicity that your question might suggest. And so I will be more than happy to further discuss this offline if you'd like, but I think that your question is well taken.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Eric Nyla with Discovery News.
Good afternoon. I'm just curious, this is Eric Nyla, Discovery News, about the uptake of particles and, you know, large globules or molecules of oil versus the small dispersed ones. Is there any idea about how that affects marine organisms? Is it easier for smaller particles to make its way into the food chain? I know you've addressed this a little bit already, but I need a little more explanation on that.
Sure. No, I'm happy to. Thanks. So what we are trying to do is make and what in essence nature does when it's breaking down and degrading oil is it in the same way that the natural dispersant tendency makes these substances available to organisms to metabolize and degrade. The chemical dispersants are mimicking nature and allowing it to degrade faster. As we said, the rule of thumb is at a 50% faster rate in order to have it degrade faster. Having them metabolize it and break these down does not mean that it is bioaccumulating or biomagnifying or getting into the food chain. Thus far, all of our modeling data, modeling results have suggested that the degradation rates of the dispersants are fairly rapid. All of the modeling, all of the monitoring data that we've seen both in deep ocean and along the shoreline have shown no bioaccumulation and no detection of the dispersant constituents. And certainly there is ongoing monitoring by NOAA and FDA to ensure that the food chain is not affected.
Your next audio question comes from the line of David Biello with Scientific American.
Yeah, David Biello, Scientific American. Two questions. One, how does this match up with the data that industry provided, which seemed to be pretty questionable? And second of all, how long were these studies, and how much did you go into kind of byproducts and the actual degradation process? I know you said that you know, it ends up at CO2 in water, but obviously, oftentimes the toxicity is not the original compound, but what it breaks down into. Thanks.
Thanks. Both of those questions are very good. I'll take the second question first, which is. About the various metabolites, you're absolutely right that what we want to see is the all of the products being degraded to CO2 and water. This particular test, the data we're discussing today, is specifically on the acute toxicity of the dispersants in the oil. I think a very important longer term research question is characterizing the various metabolites and seeing if there are any metabolites of concern in the breakdown products and the degradation products. But those data are not what's being presented today. While there are differences from the data that we're presenting today versus the data that was submitted to the National Contingency Plan data, there are not significant differences outside of the sensitivity of the tests, and so there are no dramatic. I don't believe there are any dramatic differences to report on that.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Theo Bond Hughes from Dow Jones.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. A couple of questions. If the oil dispersant mixture is no more toxic than the oil alone or the dispersant alone, what exactly is the trade-off? What do you mean when you say there are still trade-offs?
Thank you. That's an excellent question because, of course, I keep on repeating that I'm reporting on the data that we're presenting today, and the data that we're presenting today is important, but it is only one piece of the of the question. What we're reporting on today is the acute toxicity to these two sensitive test species. What we also need to recognize is that we want to and intend to better and more fully understand all of the possible consequences of this tragic oil spill, and that means that we know that we don't take adding large quantities of a chemical formulation into the Gulf lightly. And so the reason that from day one the administrator insisted upon constant monitoring, constant vigilance about this is because this is a significant quantity, and we want to one that we would want to avoid, but felt it was a necessary and important tool in the toolbox in combating this response.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Karen Zeitvogel with AFP.
She pronounced it very well. It is Karen Zeitvogel, and I'm from AFP, Agence France-Presse. I'm looking at the release that is up on the EPA website, and it says that in the case of Nokomis 3AA, when it was mixed with oil, it was found to be more toxic than oil. So I'd like you to comment on that, if I may, please. And also, did BP only use Corexit as the dispersant? Because in the release and everything else, it just says dispersant use, but it doesn't specify which one was used.
Thank you for your question. You are absolutely correct that while generally in categorizing the group, they fall into the moderately toxic. You are correct on the release, and you'll see in the report that the Nokomis dispersant did go into the highly toxic category, and that is contained in the data. The only dispersant that BP reported using was Corexit in this spill. So that is the only one that has been reported to be used by BP since the outset of the spill.
Your next audio question comes from the line of Pat Rizzuto with BNA.
Sorry, operator, this is Brendan. If I could just interject, unfortunately, this is going to have to be our last question. Thanks. Pat, go ahead.
Follow up to the previous question and then my own question, and thank you for your time today. Would EPA have any recommendations about the use of the Nokomis product in light of its increased toxicity? And second question, as you know, the House passed legislation on Friday that would set up procedures for reviewing dispersant use. Could you comment on the need for such procedures?
Certainly. First, let me stress that we're and thank you, Pat, for your question. Let me stress that we are just profoundly relieved that the well is sealed. There no more dispersant use is taking place, and reiterate that the decision that was made to use dispersant was made as a last resort and what is viewed as a necessary tool in the response in the overall response when all other measures were not adequate. Now the in terms of Nokomis, we are since we are not in the position of needing to look at any decisions currently with regard to the BP oil spill. Obviously, this is not a question that we need to deal with currently. However, as a general principle, we certainly want to have the balance of effectiveness and low toxicity in any choices that are going to be made, and all of this data will be added to the deliberations and decisions if we have to make these decisions going forward. With regard to the recent proposed legislation about dispersants, I think that the administrator has made clear that there's a need to look at lessons learned, and that includes taking a hard look at the existing regulations to ensure that we're always having the information, the data at our fingertips in order to make wise choices, and that we don't have to make these choices in crisis situations going forward. So I think that that's a general principle that we've been saying all along. Thank you very much, Pat.
All right. Thanks very much, everybody. This is Brendan. Again, if you all have additional follow-up questions, please direct them to the EPA press office. Contact information is on both the release and advisory that was sent out earlier today. And thank you very much for your time. And thank you, Dr. Anastas.
We thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now disconnect.